Okay. So tonight we have Scott Fontenot with us. That T is silent on the end, Fontenot?
Yes, it is. My favorite.
Ah!
It's not. It's no. It's just great.
Yes.
Nice.
Okay. And so I'm pretty excited to have Scott because I usually ease people in to the questions that I have because I don't know them all that well and I don't want to spook them, but I know Scott a little bit, so.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting for sure, because I was thinking earlier, you know, you guys both know me on social media, been knowing me for a while, and I don't talk about a lot of personal stuff on social media. It's hilarious sometimes because, I mean, there's nothing that gets discussed on social media as far as dating or anything on there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's strictly just usually stuff to do with horror or, you know, immediate family stuff with my kids, and that's it. So, yeah, this ought to be an interesting breakthrough conversation tonight that you're about to have.
Oh, yes. We got your fans are going to know all about
all those questions they've been asking me all these years are finally going to come to light.
Yeah.
Give everybody a little bit of information about who you are and what you're doing now.
Okay. So, Lord, I do so much though. That's the problem. Okay. So the main thing that I'm known for, of course, is Houston Horror Events and the Scared Dad podcast. Been doing horror affiliated stuff in Houston, starting off with Billy. Shit, what, 8 years ago, I think we started, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. It's been 7 years ago. It's been a long time. Doing podcasts, vendor markets, and finally Houston Horror Events, doing the Houston Horror Pop-Up Markets, and, of course, the Houston Horror Film Festival, which we're going to be releasing our dates really, really soon, I promise you. Tony is kind of fanatic when it comes to graphics and everything, so he's waiting for the perfect graphic to make the flyer right now so we can release those dates and everything. So those will be coming out pretty soon.
Awesome. And the graphics are always really good. Like whoever the artist is phenomenal.
You can thank Tony for the vast majority of those. He all the banners, the graphics, all this stuff, that's Tony that does that. So
Oh, awesome. How did I know that?
Yeah, he's a master of that stuff. Now, some of the stuff like our event poster, that's Casey Booth. You know, there's some other artwork that we use, but all the banners for the guest and our event logos and stuff, that's all Tony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's Tony. Tony's pretty impressive.
He's a bigger man of mystery than you are.
You'd be surprised. Yeah. He is. You have no idea, but yeah, he is.
We'll probably have to drag him on the podcast kicking and screaming, but we got to do that.
If we get him to stop traveling for about a week, maybe we could do that. But
yeah,
he's always everywhere. Got something going on. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Yeah.
So why do you think you're ready to come on here and kind of bare your soul a little bit if you haven't done that already and you're going to have your own podcast? Why are you ready now?
I've been knowing you guys for a while, like I said, and I've been watching the podcast and stuff, and I was like, fuck it, let's go ahead and get it knocked out. I'm ready.
This is where Chantel knows my favorite gift. This is where I'd insert my Grinch grin. You know,
it's funny because probably over the past year and a half, 2 years, I kind of come to an epiphany where I've reached that age where I don't give a fuck anymore. I don't care. Yeah. It is what it is. I'm damn near 50 years old right now, and it's here I am.
Yeah. You know what? You were saying before we started recording, you thanked us for coming to your birthday party, but also thank you for coming to our podcast event that we.
Oh, that was a blast! I can't wait for the next one. Honestly,
when we had that, thank you for coming out. You open up about how you got started on the horror scene. Mm-hmm. And so that I thought that was pretty impactful, pretty powerful, because, you know, a lot of us have that in common, how, you know, events that we went through in our childhood is why we feel so comfortable with horror.
Well, you know, it's funny you brought that up, because just a little while ago, one of my favorite movies is Nightbreed. I don't know if you remember. My favorite horror author is Clive Barker. You know, mm-hmm. I put him kind of above Stephen King just personally, just because of when I was in high school, he had one book in particular called Weave World that I really connected with, and I love that book so much. And actually, I got him to sign that back in 2016, I think it was. But there's a trope in horror that is used a lot, but a lot of people aren't familiar with it. And the trope is dark is not evil. Hmm. So things that are dark or brooding aren't necessarily evil. Sometimes they're good and comfortable. Mm-hmm. It is true. Just some people find comfort in those areas and stuff because it's what they're acclimated to. It's what they're used to. I mean, if you look at, there's a hell of a lot of stuff that looks like it'd be good that's fucking evil as hell. Now, I can give examples all day of people that, you know, whether it be serial killers or just disgusting pedophiles, that if you look at them in everyday life, you'd think they were good, but they're actually pretty fucking evil, and they're not dark. They come off as giving an appearance of being something that shouldn't be that way. And then you see, I mean, I don't know if you guys follow the Church of Satan on Twitter, but they're good folks. They're really, really good people. You know, they do a lot of good stuff. And dark isn't evil. That's one thing that, that I was talking about today.
You know what? I agree with you. That opens up a whole discussion because, like, you have church people that will cover up pedophilia, and the Church of Satan, like, that is strictly prohibited. You know, they scout against that. You know, that's something that they're really hardcore about, against.
Right.
You know, a lot of churches, a lot of different religions, you know, I don't want to call anybody's religion out specifically, but they will hide that.
They cover it up to keep a front. They cover it up to keep that good front, as though they're all good and everything, when actually they're pretty damn evil.
Have you guys seen the latest American Horror Stories?
No, I have not. I was talking to Joe about those yesterday, though. I love the fact that it's not necessarily an overreaching story arc, but it's actually serialized with different stories, like an anthology. I'll plan on checking it out soon. So,
well, this very last one from this past week is pretty much what you guys are talking about, showing a religious zealot kind of crazy. It's early or late 1700s when it was still the Black Plague, and science is starting to come into the world. It's so good, but it's exactly what you guys are talking about. Things that appear to be good are not always good.
And that trope has actually been around for a long, long time. I got the weirdest comfort movies, just so you guys know. And you guys remember Saturday the 14th back from 1984, I think it was.
Yeah.
But in the movie Saturday the 14th, you start watching it and you have Dracula and his wife, and they're trying to find the Book of Evil, and Van Helsing shows up, and he's also trying to find it. And the whole time you're thinking Van Helsing's the one that's trying to stop Dracula, but it's actually the other way around. And that's why I love Clive Barker, especially a lot of his fantasy horror has to do with how humans are actually the monsters, and the monsters they're trying to destroy are the good people. Yeah, they have powers that can kill you, and they're very scary. And, you know, they if they wanted to, they could do a lot of damage. But for the most part, and they have some evil elements to the monsters, but the vast majority are actually the good people. They're the ones that are trying to save the day. Yeah, I love that. I love that trope, and I think that's one of the reasons why I love Clive Barker so much.
Yeah,
I don't mean you guys are doing so well with the shows. I'm sorry, did I say me interrupt you?
No, you're fine.
But it does surprise me that. I mean, you are blatantly like horror, horror, horror. And we have been in the Bible Belt, we've had no protesters.
I know. I mean,
we've just had none of that, you know?
Yeah.
It's also Houston, but wait till we finally get around to actually doing our adult expo. Then we'll probably see some issues, but we'll see when that happens. we're always talking about branching off into other genres and fandoms and stuff, but. But yeah, it's been very, very, people have been very, very accepting. I mean, it was funny because the hotel, this last show, I kind of tried to give the hotel everything of what to expect. And I remember we had a meeting. They wanted to do an expectations meeting with me, and Tony ended up getting stuck in Florida. So it was just me with every head of staff at the hotel for every department. And I tried to explain to him, I said, you know, you're going to look around and you're going to see scary stuff, and you're going to see blood, and you're going to see, you know, people in crazy costumes. You're going to see a sea of black T-shirts, just black T-shirts as far as I can see. I said, but everybody's walking around with these heart bubbles above their head, and they're just happy to be there. And even I told him, I said, it's like a family reunion with family you've never met before.
Yeah.
But they're all family. They all know that you're all connected and they're all nice to each other. And during the actual event, especially towards the Sunday, they told me it was exactly what I described. They actually told me that our group was the best and most well-behaved group they have had in the 10 years the management had been there.
Wow.
Oh yeah, it was amazing. It, and that's just how it is. It's just, there's people that have a common look.
Why do you think that is? Because that's kind of how I described it to like my family when they're dropping me off. And, you know, you can see, you know, people going to look a little different, a lot of different hair colors and, you know, and the tattoos, inks everywhere, piercings everywhere, stuff like that. Like, you're going to see a lot of that, like not just one or two people, a lot of t-shirts. You know, I described it like that, too. And that's exactly, you know, what you see. But everybody's really nice, very friendly. Why do you think that is? And why does it have the stereotype of being like, you look at that and you think that is something scary or off-putting? Like you might think that this is the outliers, the taboo of society. Why do you think that it's the exact opposite of what?
Well, I think that goes back to that trope that, you know, a lot of people think that just because something is dark, it's evil, but mm-hmm. it's not. And honestly, one of the reasons I think it is most people that love horror, and I know I'm that way, I feel as though I need to go above and beyond to prove that it's not what people think.
That you're normal.
That it's all accepting. And yeah. and just the horror genre is so broad. It seems as though, and like you guys know, I've been working for Comicpalooza for 8 years now. And you want to talk about toxic fandoms. Yeah. We can talk about Comicpalooza. There's just so much gatekeeping and it's incredibly toxic. And I don't find that same issue to the extent that it is in other fandoms, that it is in horror. It is there, and we squash it really, really quick. But I'll give you a great example. I don't know if you guys had a chance to meet one of my cousins that came down for Comicpalooza, but my cousin Raul came down. And I love my cousin Raul so much. God, he is so awesome. And he and I grew up together. That was back during, back when I was hood back then and shit. And it was so funny because when Raul sent me his email address so I could send him his passes, I sent it to Tony, and then I wrote Tony and said, I just realized that's like his old gang affiliation, just so you know, his email address. So Raul came down, and he told me, he said, it was just so amazing the reception he got from people and how everywhere he went, everybody was just talking to him like they knew him forever. He had such a good time. And it was funny because his big thing is he's into car crank it up competitions, audio competitions. Mm-hmm. And there was a big one that same weekend, and his wife wanted to go to that one. And he said, no, we're going to my cousin's show. And she was actually mad at first. And that night she was like, we'll be back next year. And we bring in the rest of the family. This is just awesome. An amazing environment. It just, I mean, you guys know, it's just so welcoming. The euphoria you get while you're over there, it's hard to compare it to anything else. And it's that way. And it's not just our show. It's the same way with Texas Frightmare Weekend.
Right.
You know, Texas Frightmare Weekend was always the exact same way. It's just being, it's a family reunion with family you've never met before. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Clive Barker, this is what I was trying to get to a minute ago. Uh-huh. Clive Barker has some BDSM kind of visualization. Are you into that?
I'm into soft. I'm into soft.
Soft meaning you have to have furs on your whips?
No. Well, light whipping. Bondage is cool as long as it's light. I'm a dom. I'm not sub at all. I had somebody try that with me one time, and it just totally threw me off. I mean, the vibe just went away. The first time I got choked, I was like, whoa.
He says the vibe.
Whoa, where did that shit come from? I never authorized that shit.
Y'all didn't talk about it beforehand?
No, not at all. I think alcohol had a part to play with that one, but... Yeah, that was definitely. I was like, no. Nah. We never agreed upon that. Let's go back to what we were doing before.
Yeah, so when you say dom, you know, like on a scale to from pinhead to give me somebody, Chantel. From pinhead to
Christian Grey.
Pee-wee Herman.
Okay, so if that's the 10 to the 1, I'll put myself at a 5.
Okay, so between Pee Wee Herman and Pinhead, five.
Pee Wee Herman is not the right
price. I know, that's a rough one. It's kind of...
Okay. Okay, well, you know, I already said, you know, I feel like we kind of warmed up with the casual talk about the festival and all that. So now, you know, I just want to just go right in. Okay.
So he just told you he's the Dom.
Yeah, I heard.
There will be none of that.
But
sorry, we're really awful.
Well, okay. Yeah, me then. So what horror scene turned you on?
Ooh.
Damn. Or movie.
No, I want the scene.
Actual scene. Okay, let me think about that. I don't want to leave dead air, so I'm gonna think about that while we're talking about stuff. But if you have any other questions, we could always come back to that. But I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna think of something. Don't worry, I just don't want too much dead air. But I'll definitely think of something.
Okay.
Well, I did see that it was the I don't remember. They said 25 years or 35 years anniversary of Event Horizon, and that was always one of my favorite like.
That's like, my number one sci-fi horror. I absolutely love Event Horizon.
It's like Hellraiser in space. I fucking love
it. Yeah, it
it's
is.
So great. Yeah.
What's funny is, you know, we did a podcast once about haunted house movies, and I actually brought that one in because technically it's a haunted house movie.
It is.
Because it's very paranormal, supernatural. It's definitely a... You still got me thinking, Dicey. You see me over here.
He's like,
you see my wheels turning right now.
Dicey, give him an example. What's one of your favorites?
No.
Honestly, okay. So I'll go with the earliest one.
Okay.
How about that?
Yes.
The earliest one, which is honestly just probably going to be so weird, but it I saw it when I was very, very young, and it was really, really hot. But the tree scene from Evil Dead 1. Was absolutely insane. Do you guys remember that?
I do.
Okay.
Yes, I sure do. She's like,
can you kind of set the stage for us, kind of remind us of how it went, you know?
This woman gets sexually assaulted by a tree and all the vines, and she literally gets tied up and by the vine.
It's
yeah.
very hentai-esque.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. So is it the vine? Is it the tying up? Is it the
part? Okay, so it's part that, but the majority, and Chantel, you may remember this, but towards the end of the scene, she was enjoying it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
No, I remember the scene.
That was the big part, and that's the big part with me. Yeah. I have to see somebody enjoy it. That's my big thing. That's like really, really important.
Does anybody
for sure.
Put the safe word out for you?
Oh, yeah.
Chantel, you take it away for a second. Let me digest.
She's got to dig a little deeper. What else do I got to find? No, what I'm curious about, Scott, you, and I'm going to make it a lame conversation maybe, but whatever. She'll get whatever she
needs. We'll get back to it.
When she's ready. So, you know, you have played many roles in the community of events and the horror community. Why do you think that you're gravitating more? I mean, I think you've really kind of found a good team with the guys you're working. You know, we just interviewed Troy.
Troy, yeah.
And like she said, we need to somehow get Tony. I don't even know how that's going to happen. But
I'll get him on here, don't worry.
Right? But you've really found a good groove with these guys. Like, you guys are making magic happen. Is that what makes you, like, really, like, dedicate so much of yourself to this?
Oh, yeah. And what's funny is, you know, me, Troy, and Tony have been on each other for about 2 years now. And the way we ended up meeting is me and Billy were looking for guests for the podcast. And we saw they had the original film festival coming up back in 2019. So I invited them over to the apartment, said, let's do an interview. And we gave them a free spot at the last Scary Dad Vendors Market right before COVID that we had to go ahead and promote their show. And me and Tony actually talk about this all the time. You know, when we first met, you know, he was like, I don't know what to think about this guy. I don't know about this dude. Because I'll be honest with you, people tell me this all the time. If you look at me, like, just because I've changed so much over the past 6 or 7 years. And like I told you, I've come to an epiphany where I'm like, look, I don't need to be, this is me now. This is what I've always been. I'm ready to just be me. I don't look like I'd be a horror fan. I don't look like I would, you know, and especially if you knew me 10 years ago, I was oil and gas for 20 years. I was lower. I used to always tell people I was lower upper management for Halliburton Energy Services. I wore a suit every day to work. I actually had an office instead of a cubicle. I was Mr. Corporate. I did a whole lot of golfing, hunting, fishing. I drove a 4x4 pickup truck. I was so, but there was, I wasn't happy, which is so weird. It's like I was in that, like they say, when in Rome, I was just in that environment with people that were into that kind of stuff. And it's so funny how I've just gotten to a point where I'm like, look, I'm a big kid. I'm a horror nerd. This is the kind of stuff I enjoy. You know, this is what I want to do. So when they first met me, you know, they looked at me, they're like, eh, I don't know about this dude. But I'll be honest with you, Tony and Troy, especially, and just because Troy lives out of state, me and Tony are best friends now. I mean, it's so funny. We, you know, the other night I had to go meet him before he went out of town, and I had to go pick up some stuff for a client of ours. And I told him, I said, look, we'll meet for one drink and that's it. And like seven drinks later, because me and him get together and we just start talking. And it's just, we start talking, we start planning, we start coming up with ideas. We just mesh so well. And when we bounce stuff off of each other, like everything that happens within the film festival, you know, he's in charge of his part. Troy's in charge of his part, but we bounce everything off of each other. You know, nothing gets decided until we actually talk about, you know, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. It's made an incredible team.
It really has.
It has. And people tell us that all the time. It's just, it has really, really worked well.
Yeah. That's when I met all of you guys. I met them at the same time that I met you. Yeah. I was at the Scary Dad. Yeah. Event. It was a great event. I thought you did a good job with the event.
Well, we're bringing it back. I talked to Billy the other day. We're finally, so Houston Horror Events is going to take a small break right before the big show next year. So okay. We're probably going to go ahead and do a Scary Dad vendor market again next year. So we'll be bringing Scary Dad. Awesome. We're working on the new season of the podcast and everything. And yeah, that'll be coming back next year in 2023. So
fantastic.
Oh, we want to be there.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. You know, you guys have front row access.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, you ready for me to come in smoking hot again?
It's good, good.
He's like, all right, come on.
You had a break now.
Now, just to preface this, I do want to tell everyone listening and watching, Scott is an eligible bachelor. So we are trying to work him over for everyone who is interested.
Because over 2 years
trust.
Now.
Trust, sir. We saw some interest when we were at your birthday party. Like, okay.
Yeah, in fact, when you and I were at the bar, you know, I was like, because somebody came up and started talking at the time. I was like, oh shoot, I missed that he was dating.
because I was like, no.
Like no. I felt like it was one of those, hey, stop talking to Scott, he's here with me type things. And I was like, oops, my bad. And I didn't know if I had read that wrong, that was the situation with her or whatever. But you are single at the moment.
Yeah.
You're single at the moment. Okay. So actually bringing it back to that conversation, when we had it, you said that it was easy. Sex was easy right now. It's okay to talk about some of the stuff we talked about then?
Yeah. Yeah. There's no problem. That's one thing that I've thought for a long time.
Okay. You mentioned that sex was easy, but it was difficult to get into a relationship right now. Yeah. And you're in a very interesting situation.
Oh, well, that's not quite it. Okay, so what I meant was, though, relationships in general are harder than just having sex.
Okay.
And that's the hard thing, is keeping a relationship. It's a lot more work.
Do you guys find that that's the case as we have aged? Like, it seems harder and harder. I think because we give more fucks now about our own independence and about what we get out of the situation than when we were younger. Does that make sense?
Well, my biggest issue is I've been single for so long. It's so hard to change that. Because, you know, I decided to get to a point where I was happy, you know, being single and happily just being me. And it's like, do I want to take a chance of changing that?
Why? I mean, but why change it though? Like, why is that something that you would even
consider? Yeah, you had mentioned that you're...
Oh, well, there's a million things I miss from being in a relationship. I mean, that goes without saying. There's far more positive than there is negative, in my opinion, when it comes to being in a relationship. But it's just dealing with the negative aspects that it's like, do I want to go through that again?
Cost benefit right. analysis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Does yeah. your living situation play any part of it?
No, I don't find it all. Because I've talked to people about that before and explained everything, and you know, there's 100%. There's one person that I'm considering right now.
Uh-huh.
Oh, we'll okay. see, but they're moving real slow, which I'm fine with. Trust me, that's okay. not a problem at all. But I mean, they've had the kids and everything, so it's
right.
yeah, it's that part of it is no big deal.
So you're our age group. What do you think about all these new relationship, I don't know what the word would be, you know, you have poly, you have open relationships, you have, there's so many things now, there's just so many things, and fluid sexual, what do you call it, when somebody, identity, you know, so all these yeah. things. I mean, do you find that was always there as a
yes,
man?
Yes, yeah, yeah. And I've had that discussion with someone before because, you know, when my daughter first came out to me as bi back in the day, you know, I've had discussions before with people that were like, you know, how come we never heard about this stuff when we were younger? And I was like, because people are scared to talk about it.
Right.
So now... it was always there. It's just people are more open to actually discussing it now mm-hmm. to where it just looks like it, and just like with anything. And I tell people all the time, you know, people talk about why there's more crime now. Where's it? While there's more of this, because we have more access to it.
Right.
You know, social media, you see it more. You just didn't see it before because it was kind of hidden. You know, if a crime happened in my hometown in New Iberia, Louisiana, the only people that knew about it were in New Iberia. Now, right. because of social media, it gets everywhere. So it looks like it's so, so much more. Now, granted, it probably is. I mean, it definitely is more than it used to be, but it looks worse than it actually is. Yeah.
Well, there's more damn people.
All this shit was always, I mean, you remember growing up. God, I'm going to start quoting some comedians. I listen to a lot of stand-up. You know, back when you were in elementary school, you all know the one kid that was overly feminine and kids would pick on him and everything. And, you know, he wasn't doing that by choice. He didn't choose to have all the other kids pick on him
right.
because he was feminine. He was gay. You know, yes. it's just it was always there. It's just now more acceptable. And they have more empowerment to where they're willing to come out and talk about it and everything. You know, I go to I live in a very, very conservative area, which drives me absolutely insane. But it's a lot of fun wearing some of the T-shirts that I own to the grocery store down the street because I love the looks that I get sometimes. And my daughter had so many issues for so many years, just finding people that accepted her and everything. And then it's so funny. And I never thought this would ever happen. It just amazes me so much. But she discovered something called Color Guard, which I knew back when I was in high school as the Flag Corps. It was the Flag Girls. And the number of gay, trans, and bi kids in Color Guard absolutely amazes me. It's like she's found her clan. Mm-hmm. You know, she's found her group, and it has made all the difference in the world with her. So it's there, and it's always been there. It's just now people are more empowered to accept what they are and come
so
out with
it. Now that you're getting older, go ahead.
I was just saying, as there should be.
Yeah, exactly. There shouldn't be a problem. As long as you're not hurting anybody, fuck it.
Yeah.
Right. So now
Yeah. So you're getting into this, you know, maybe you get a new relationship, you're not sure. Would you be like, okay, I can do this poly situation, like two chicks, me, or two dudes and a chick. Would you be willing to try that?
No. And the primary reason is I've been in a lifestyle relationship before, and it Nah.
Well, that's interesting. Talk about that if you're willing to.
That one I'm gonna leave out a little bit because that was a long time ago. That was another situation and stuff. I'll just
because we've done episodes talking about, you know, relationships like that, and I've seen it a lot more as I've gotten older around me, and I guess it was always happening, but people just weren't talking about it. You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's always been happening. It was so funny because I remember the first time I heard somebody mention, once I was an adult, somebody mentioned a swingers club. It was so funny. But God, me and my ex-wife were actually walking out of a club one night. And somebody saw us walking out and they said, "Do you know where there's any swing clubs out there?" And back then, I was thinking some Johnny Taylor, somebody wanted to swing out dance and that kind of shit, like we used to do at Miami Moon back in Lafayette. I said, "Well, there's probably a couple in Lafayette, but you probably really have to go." And that's when I realized, and I remember the first time I ever actually went to a swingers club out here in Houston. It's a long time ago. God, this was 25 years ago. I was just absolutely shocked with what was going on in there. It was nuts. And it was so funny because you get there and, you know, everybody just kind of subdued. There's tables. It's like a nightclub. There's a dance floor. There's tables and everything. And the night goes on. The lights kind of go down. People start dancing and everything. And then as your eyes get adjusted to the light, you start seeing shit that's going on. It is absolutely insane. I remember looking against one of the back walls and it was so funny because there's a guy there, he's getting a blowjob, and the woman giving him a blowjob, she's got a woman going down on her, and she's got a guy going down on her. And it was just this endless train going along the
couch. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was.
You're like, "I'm not sitting on that couch."
I used to go to a few places around here, but they always get raided at some point.
They always get raided. Or what's funny is there used to be so many. I mean, there was secrets, encounters, TMZ. There's so many. It's like they would open up and they would do well for a while and then things would move on. And what's funny is, okay, I remember the first Houston Horror pop-up market we did at the Marriott Hobby. So just so you know, I remembered it was the second one. It was the January one when Ari came down. Just being that I'm familiar with the lifestyle scene and everything, I remember that there's a group called Desirous Party that does an annual New Year's Eve party at the Ritz, right south of the Marriott Hobby. And their host hotel is actually the Marriott. Marriott Hobby does a bunch of lifestyle stuff there. And I remember they have a lot of parties they host there. I remember we were arranging the furniture that morning, and I see glitter all over all these chairs. And I'm like, shit, they must have had the annual New Year's Eve party here the other day. And that shit used to get wild. But yeah, I was like, they could have cleaned these damn things at least before we actually used them for this event.
Thank goodness we had hand sanitizer that day.
Somewhere called the Blue Door, I think, one time here, too. The Blue Door, Red Door.
Red Door. I heard of the Red Door.
Red Door? Okay. So many things just started flashing through my mind at that time. This is a whole nother lifetime ago.
There's different levels of those clubs. You know, I've been to the ones that were fairly subdued. They were mostly, like, soft. Swing, you would call it, where it was just women being with women. And then there are ones that I walked into where they hand you a towel at the door. Yeah. It's like, there you go. I'm like, no, I'm not getting in your hop tub tonight. I'll be fine over
Love
here.
It. Doing Love some it. Shots.
Now, I got to ask, though, because we've had it before. We've had a guest on here, and he said a little too much, and he upset someone that he was seeing, and so we end up having to take that we had to delete that whole episode. We're not gonna have any issues.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Don't worry.
Whatever you say on here, nobody's gonna be looking at us funny. Or
no, you're fine. I've been single for a while now. Don't worry.
Okay, good. And this is not in any way Scott telling anybody that this sort of thing is going to ever happen at a Houston Horror Film Festival.
No. God.
We will not.
Like, I missed the real party that was going on at that just, 80s party. And
just so everyone knows, which there's plenty of rumors out there, we have not had an event where I haven't gone to bed by myself. I have gone to bed by myself at every single event we have ever had.
When you actually get to sleep.
Yeah, when I get to sleep. But yeah, I have literally gone to bed by myself for every event, even though there's rumors out there and everything and people think.
We're not hearing these rumors. I don't think we're in the right circles.
I swear, every time I got... The morning, you were one of the first people I saw. When I got on the bottom floor, you were one of the first people I saw. When I got there, I was like, does he ever sleep? Because I know I hardly sleep. But
I get a little bit, but I think that's why Tony keeps me around, because I'm the first one up taking care of things, and I'm the last one going to bed, making sure everything's straight at night, too. So.
Yeah. Y'all look like chill, though. Like, you weren't flustered. Like
it was, I love it. You have no idea how much I love doing it. And the thing about it is, that's another thing that makes us such a good team, is we only do this because we enjoy doing it.
Right.
I mean, we don't do this. We all have full-time jobs.
Yeah.
You know, we do this just because we enjoy doing it.
Yeah, same, like with podcasts and everything. Yeah. Just love it. Yeah. Okay, so what's your favorite episode of your podcast?
Oh, my favorite episode of the Scary Dad podcast is, honestly, it's probably going to be a tie between our voodoo episode we did, because just growing up, it was so funny, because me and my sister actually had a really good discussion. Me and my sister had never talked about this before, but there's a tremendous amount of connection. I was raised Catholic, and there's a tremendous amount of connection between Catholicism, Christianity, and voodoo. And we had a lot of fucking voodoo elements in our life growing up and everything. And there was some shit happening there and everything that we had never discussed before. So the voodoo episode, and me and Billy did an episode one time about the Coral Castle. Have you guys ever heard of the Coral Castle? If you get a chance, look it up. It's this thing. It's an attraction that was built in Florida. This old man, I want to say he was an immigrant from Cuba, built this castle out of these huge coral stones. And it is one of the most crazy places you've ever seen, because there's a lot of rumor about just paranormal stuff. And just the way this guy has this place set, I want to say it's a 6-ton stone of coral that only has a tractor bearing at the bottom of it, and you can move it with one finger, because apparently the spot that it's in and the balance that it's in, there's no one that can explain, you know, there's no physics person that can explain how it's able to spin that easy. It's just the way this guy put this place together is absolutely unreal. But yeah, those two episodes I love so much. There's a few other ones that I enjoy a lot, but those two have always just kind of held a special, especially the Coral Castle one. That one I came up with the episode, Billy hadn't researched it, and once I started talking about it, he was just absolutely dumbfounded about that one. It was
That's up your alley, Chantel. I know.
Yeah, Coral Castle is an amazing story.
Wow, I'm gonna have to check it out.
Yeah. And Scott, I believe I saw somewhere where you're Creole.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I had never even heard of that until I'm from North Carolina, Northeast. Okay. And until I came here to Texas and kind of ventured to New Orleans. And that's when I heard about Creole. But I know what it is now, but tell me, you know, from your perspective, what that is.
Okay. So It's interesting, because, you know, for years I have family members that have tried to actually get Creole put down as a race, because it's really, really complicated. Because when I tell people I'm black, they like, no, you're not. I'm like, yeah. But my favorite one is when I tell people I'm black, they say, who's white, your mama or your daddy? I'm like, they're both Creole. I said, if I take you to a funeral, you're going to see every single range in the color spectrum. I think Red Fox said it best. He's like, you know, when it comes to black, we're white, mocha, almond, you know, dark chocolate. We're every single shade you could possibly imagine. But we're all just as black as one another. And it's funny, because, like, where I was raised, where I was raised in New Iberia, Louisiana, we had one Mexican family in the entire town. It was the people that owned Tampico's. And so everybody knew I was black. I mean, everywhere I went, you know, there was no question about it. Everybody knew it. Once I left New Iberia, it was an absolute culture shock. And it actually gave me a serious identity crisis for a while, because I was like, no, I'm black. Really? I remember I was in a club in St. Helena, Arkansas. And this club was a trip. It was hood as fuck. You walked in and there was a metal. This was back in. This is shit. This is before my mom died. So this is back in 1994. And you'd walk in and there was a metal detector. And the thing is, there were cats that couldn't get through the metal detector hanging out outside. And you walk in the bar, and the front bar, they had four. You know how you put the liquor bottles back behind the bar? So they had 40s. You could actually buy 40s of St. Ives, OE, and everything else. Yeah, that's where I was at. It was one of those clubs where the DJ talks through the whole fucking song. You're trying to dance. Stop it. So I remember we were in there, and I used to work on a cruise ship. I was a sous chef back in the day. And it was a huge paddle wheel boat, and we had stopped in St. Helena, and we were in there. We were about 40 deep, our group that was in there. And I went to request some music, and I remember the dude getting on the mic. We got some Mexican in here. It's like, I ain't Mexican, motherfucker. This white boy, what he has. I was like, bro, what the fuck are you talking? And I remember just thinking, I was like, this is just the most frustrating shit I've ever been through. But yeah, so it's a culture, you know. I'm very proud to be black. My kids are proud to be black, even though, honestly, growing up, and it's so sad, I've had to have this conversation with both of them. And both of them, they turned 14. You know, I've told them both, if anybody asks you if I'm black, go ahead and tell them. Don't offer it up in advance. You know, there's no reason to even start the conversation if you don't have to. But yeah, so, you know, they're all proud of it. I'm proud of it and everything. It's the way I was raised. My mama, you know, she was one thing that you don't. My mama used to always say, there's two things that you can't change. You got to stay black and you got to die. That's the only two things that are guaranteed in life.
I never, even when I first met you, I was always like, I always thought you were just, you know, a regular black dude. I didn't know any difference.
Right.
And
right.
Then I remember who was like, what is Scott? I'm like, what do you mean, what is he?
Well, I've been asked so many things. I get asked Filipino all the time. I'm like, I'm 5'11". When was the last time you saw a 5'11", 6-foot Filipino? Like, seriously, you gotta ask me if I'm Filipino right now. And one of the reasons, like, if you look at, you know, my family, like if I show you my maternal family, straight off the reservation, they have a very, very high, they were actually kicked off the reservation about two generations ago, but that's a whole nother story. It was bad. Those guys were bad. That's where like the murders and everything happened way back in the day and stuff. It's some wild shit. Oh yeah, it's an awesome story. But so that's why I find that I'm brighter than a lot of my cousins, because I have that really, really strong Native American background on my maternal side. If you look at my paternal side, they're a lot darker on that side. So. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it, this shit pops up all the time. You know, I'm the one with the good hair. My sister was the one who used to have to get hers permed and ironed all the time when she was growing up and stuff. You go to a funeral and you're going to see every hair texture, eye color, everything you can imagine. But we're all cousins. We all love each other. We're all raised together. It's a beautiful culture. My family goes back pre-Louisiana Purchase. You know, we've been in Louisiana for a long, long time. So,
well, I would imagine growing up there is probably when you started falling in love with horror, because, I mean, you go to Louisiana and you're just going to hear all the stories of witches and,
oh god, the shit my mama
priestesses and
the stuff, yeah. My mama used to tell me just as she went through in her childhood growing up. And what was funny is I was telling somebody the other day, like, one of my favorite stories is a story about Kushma, and my son swears up and down that he has dealt with Kushma before. But Kushma is basically layman's term, sleep paralysis. But the Kushma demon is what Creoles feel as though causes the sleep paralysis to occur. And I mean, if you look at my son, tell you what happened with him with Kushma, it would scare the shit out of you. And when I was growing up, that's one of the things that, you know, the stories my mom would tell me about the Luminaires des Enfants, which are the baby lights that she used to say that she would go outside And they lived in the country. And the thing about it is, over the years, when I learned how my family got the property they currently live on, it kind of started making sense why some bad shit happened on their property, because they basically stole it from a guy. They killed somebody and stole it from him. The luminaires des enfants were lights that they would see at night. And my grandpa would run outside with a shotgun, and he would actually shoot these lights away. And my mom would say when he would shoot them, you'd hear like a scream, and the lights would go away. And those were supposed to be ghosts of babies that had died.
Oh, wow.
And Kushma, my mom would tell you about Kushma, and the night she saw him, it would terrify you, because you could see how much she actually believed that that kind of shit happened. And like I said, that's the stories I used to hear growing up. And,
yeah.
You know, my dad died. The main thing that got me into horror, the biggest, my dad died when I was 9. My mom was a single mom. She worked 2 jobs. She told the people at the video store and the movie theater, you can let him watch whatever he wants. If he wants to rent rated R movies, go ahead and let him do it. You know, just he can do what he wants. And so me and my cousin Mark would just watch horror movies all the time. And I mean, just all the time. That's why the first horror parody we ever filmed was Friday the 13th, Part 8. And what's funny is when we filmed Friday the 13th, Part 8, we did it Part 8 because we thought there's no way they'll ever get to Part 8. They're only at Part 3 right now. They've got 12 movies in the franchise now. It's like, good Lord almighty. And just, I've always, like I said, I've just always had the connection to it. But,
And, you know, it was around the time that I started writing my vampire series that I got into metal music. So I grew up, gospel, R&B, even classical, everything, jazz, whatever. But it wasn't until I started delving into horror, researching horror, that I really started liking metal. And so I've been listening to metal since like 2009. Okay. And so do you think, and I see that we have a lot of the same musical artists and that we like, because I know you were talking about Rob Zombie and some others. What do you think the crossover is with metal and horror? Because I know it just fit for me. That is the mood that I'm capturing.
Right. Well, I mean, just everything, just the tones, the visuals, everything else, especially with the video music age and just the age of actually seeing these artists and the way they dress. It just is kind of awesome connection. But what's funny is I grew up just entirely Zydeco, R&B and rap. I listened to growing up. I mean, that's it. I didn't listen to anything else. And it was so bad. I remember I have a good friend of mine, Toby Daspit, who he was my English teacher in my sophomore year. And he wrote a book about modern day pedagogy, which is the passage of history through oral methods. And he wrote this book on that. One of the things his chapter they wrote in the book was about the use of rap music and hip hop to for social justice and bring us up. He wrote this book back in 1996, I believe. And he actually dedicated that chapter to my mom, because the day he met my mom, it was so funny. My mom goes to the school and tells Toby, I don't know what you want to do about Scott, because all he wants to listen to is that damn rap music, because that's all I listen to. Mm-hmm. And I remember my junior year of high school, I hung out with everybody. That's one thing. I listened to my music, but I hung out with everybody. I hung out with the metalheads. I just love people, and I got along with everybody. And my friend Thomas Peters came over to my house, and I remember he had the Cowboys from Hell cassette tape. It had just been released. And I looked at it, and I don't know if you remember that tape, but like on the cover, it was a black and white image of these guys with long hair hanging out in like a bar. It was like a Western scene. And I remember looking at him saying, what kind of glam metal bullshit is this? And he goes, trust me, just go ahead and listen to it. And I threw it in. And I have literally been a metal fan ever since then. Like at that point, I just started just exploring. And he had always like brought me stuff that I would check out and everything. But it was that one Cowboys from Hell cassette that just kind of just blew my mind and just opened me up to everything.
That's Pantera?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I can tell you guys. Oh, did you? I'm sorry. I didn't want to cut you off.
You better go ahead and ask what you want to ask before I get to the next one.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, add to what you guys are talking about. I've been a fan of metal. I mean, it just naturally progressed into that for me. In probably junior high, high school. And for me, it was really because there was a lot of anti shit going on, like, oh, you know, people who listen to this music, they, you know, you, they play the records backwards and they're hearing all this stuff. I literally remember being at, going with my grandmother to these, because I was raised by my grandma, to this church people's houses and hanging out with their kids. And their kids are like, yeah, yeah, there's devil, like this record. And I mean, I was already knowing what metal was, but I wasn't really listening to it yet. And this is what actually made me want to get into it. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, listen to this record. And so they started putting it backwards. And I was like, it just sounds like it's going backwards. What the fuck, you know? And I had to bend, you guys, like maybe 9 or 10. And then we go to the living room with all the adults. And they're like doing this whole praise Jesus thing in the living room. And they're talking in tongues. And they're just going crazy. And I'm like, wow. I don't know what is happening. But after that, I mean, after that, I was like, what is this stuff? Yeah. Like, you know, it made me more curious about it because of, you know, the whole, you know, when they started attacking all the bands. And, you know, I took the hair metal band route, but eventually I got into all the harder metal, especially when I hit high school.
Yeah. And what's funny is if you look, and I can send this to y'all just to make you laugh, but if you look at my senior prom picture, I noticed this the other day when I sent it to somebody to show them. I look exactly like one of the South Park goth kids. I'm literally dressed. I have like the kind of curly hair where it's just at the top and it kind of, it gets a little bit long in the back, and I'm in my tuxedo with white on white. I look nice. Just like one of the South Park goth kids in the damn senior.
That's prom. So great. It's
terrible. God.
Too funny.
I lived through that. Because I was in church all the time, and then I went to a Christian high school too. That I remember that whole era. So, but I didn't listen to the music at the time because it was like white music to me then. You know.
Right. Well, the Satanic Panic actually. I remember Geraldo.
Satanic Panic.
Geraldo was actually in my hometown. I was filming part of that, but he had did like a series of shows about this, and he was in my hometown filming at one point. And it was funny because I remember watching it, and I was like, my friend Ricky Ryder spray painted that. What are you talking about? This is such a damn thing. This is Ricky.
Yeah, and I have to say, because I did quotes for the video for whoever sees this when I said white music, but for those who are just listening to this on audio, I did finger quotes, okay? There were air quotes.
but that's how it was. I mean, just growing up when I grew up, that's what it was. You know, there's a difference. I mean, you have no idea. And like, you know, I was in the gifted program. I was in all this other stuff. I was in speech and debate for a short time. You know, I can't tell you how many times I was told that I was acting white. I'm like, I'm not. I'm just acting me.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
Same here. Yeah. But of course, I have a lot of Spanish blood in my family, so I look more white. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Scott, when you're doing your dom thing, which song are you putting on?
Set the scene.
I got a playlist for that kind of stuff too, but it's a weird mix. It's a weird mix. It's a weird mix of a whole bunch of different stuff. Because I mean, I just graduated in 1991. You know, I'm real big with Aaron Hall. I'm real big with just all that shit from back in the day. But as far as just kind of the more aggressive play, I guess you could say, definitely, Nine Inch Nails will always be there, just forever and ever and ever. Oh, yeah, Post was a great one. What's funny is, I'll tell you something. I was in the car the other day, and I picked up my daughter from Color Guard. And I had the volume down on my radio a little bit, and I was on the phone. And I get off the phone, and Closer was on, but you could barely hear it. And my daughter goes, hey, turn that one up. I'm like, how the fuck do you know that song? You're not supposed to know what that song is. You're 16. But yeah, definitely some Nine Inch Nails. Trent Reznor is just.
Mike. from Magic Mike. Does she know it from Joe Manganiello's scene in Magic Mike?
Hope not. She probably knows it just from my playlist from it coming on. Because, I mean, I've gotten my daughter into the Smiths, into the Cure, into all kinds of stuff from back in the day. So.
Which shows are you going to coming up? There's a slew of them. Like a lot of my favorites are coming through over the next couple of months. Which ones are you going to?
Well, I got Delta H coming up. I got Eastern Rim coming up. We got MonsterCon coming up in San Antonio in September. And I think that I need to work. my boss is like, you've been taking way too much time off. So I just started a new job too. Another job. I got another contract I signed last week for another position. But and I think I'm going to take a break after MonsterCon until the Halloween event. I may go to Louisiana Comic Con. I'm debating on that one. It's the first weekend of October. But I got to put some work in, too.
Yeah.
But I mean,
what rock concerts?
Concerts? Oh, shit. Yeah. Well, I got Rob Zombie coming up. I got Rob Zombie coming up this Sunday. I'm really, really hoping to make, and I can't understand how Jane's Addiction is opening for Smashing Pumpkins, but I don't want to get into that debate because that shit made zero sense to me. Like, Smashing Pumpkins should be opening for Jane's Addiction, especially because Jane's Addiction is also going to be doing Porno for Pyro stuff. I'm like, there's no way that Smashing Pumpkins catalog can come anywhere near Jane's Addiction. And Kid Cudi. I plan on hitting the Kid Cudi concert, so. Okay. I'm a huge fan of Kid Cudi. I don't know if you guys are familiar with his stuff. If you listen to, I want to say it's Man on the Moon 3, and he has one of the album that has a serious 1990s Nine Inch Nails vibe. Mm-hmm. Kid Cudi has some good stuff. And he was also, I mean, he was in the movie X, the recent A24 release. That it came out.
I missed that one. I wanted to see that so bad.
It's a good movie. It's a really good movie.
I can't wait to see it.
Watch it because they have a prequel coming out. But I've been telling everybody, you actually want to watch X before you watch the prequel. Because the prequel, the end of X is what leads off into the prequel, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
So definitely try to watch X before Phoebe comes out. So okay. Hopefully we'll get a pre-screening for that one. I'm looking forward to that one. But yeah, so Kid Cudi is going to be the furthest one out, I think. And other than that, I'm looking to see what else is coming up.
So no Lamb of God or
Oh, shit. I forgot Alice about that one.
Alice in Chains, Trivium, Hatebreed.
Alice in Chains, I'm not too worried about it. Hatebreed, I think, isn't Hatebreed playing with Lamb of God, if I'm not mistaken? That's on the same bill, I think.
I can't remember which one. There's either them or Trivium.
Okay. But I remember seeing the Hatebreed today, actually. I remember getting with somebody about that one, about going to that one. So, yeah, it's definitely one I want to catch. Drowning Pool is going to be coming to Wildcatters on the 14th of October, which I plan on going to that one. But, yeah, I miss concerts. Yeah, I got so used to not going to them during COVID and everything. But
definitely, smoking hot now.
Two big ones are definitely Jane's Addiction and then the Kid Cudi. Those are the two big ones that I'm looking forward to.
Okay.
Jane's Addiction is awesome. I remember seeing them Lollapalooza 1992, I think, which was Lollapalooza number 2. Uh-huh. But yeah, Jane's Addiction is awesome.
I definitely want to hear him talk about the pop-up market before we, I don't know how much time we have left.
Yes.
So October 29th is going to be our next Halloween pop-up market at Wildcatters and Katy. We still have possibly two more guests to announce, one for sure. But this is going to be the biggest pop-up market we've done yet. I mean, it's got Corey Feldman coming down, for Christ's sake. That was a pretty big announcement. So
Lost Boys, I think. This is the 35th year after Lost Boys?
Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, it is. Yeah. So we got Corey Feldman. We got Paul Taylor. Almost slipped up the one that we haven't announced yet just now. we got Michael Myers from Curse of what's funny is, you know, we got the Michael Myers from Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, which gets a lot of hate, but it also, it's a lot of people's favorite part of the franchise. They actually love that particular movie. That one went really, really, really big, so we're looking forward to having him. I'll throw this out there. The next announcement, the final announcement, unless we add another person, is going to be a woman, and it's going to be a final girl. So I'll go ahead and throw that out. for everybody to see. And it's going to be a big one. It's going to be one that hasn't been in Texas in a long, long time. And our show is pretty much the only show that she's willing to do. So we're nice. Looking forward to having her down here. And we're going to have vendors. We're going to have the costume contest. Corey's going to be performing that afternoon. And then that evening, we're going to have Ari perform. And we're going to have a free party, Halloween party afterwards and everything. Plus a DJ inside, everything outside as far as the live bands go. It, October 29th, it's going to be a wild time. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Nice. Do y'all still have vendor apps open?
No, vendor apps are totally closed. We got so many.
You should know somebody that has a booth, you know, that I see. You may know somebody.
We literally got, for 60 vendor spots, I want to say we had 120 vendor applications the night we announced.
Yeah.
Well, so they went really quick.
Yeah, they know to jump on that immediately. Oh, yeah. Jump on that shit immediately now. I have not been to a pop-up market yet.
Oh, they're great. The pop-up markets are a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm going to go to this one.
They've gotten really big, too. I remember our first pop-up market was 250 people, and the last pop-up market we did was right over 2,000.
Wow. Okay.
Speaking of, what was the numbers for the actual event? We never heard.
For the film festival, the biggest day was the Saturday, and we had right at 10,000 individual people through the door.
Wow.
Congrats, man.
Thank you. Yeah, shocked the shit out of me, actually, because it was funny is because I had actually capped the number. I told Tony, I said, this is my max. So I kept watching it during the day, and we reached that number, and I remember you saw me that day. I was back and forth kind of just watching everything. And at one point,
you and Tony were like,
at one point I called Tony. I said, hey, get with Justin. Let's go ahead. And I was looking at the line. I was like, this is going to be it. You know, we don't want more than this. Well, apparently there was a miscommunication. And instead of stopping at the bag of wristbands they had then, they went ahead and opened an additional bag of wristbands. And I remember I got with Tony and found that out. I was like, I was mad at first, but then I was like, wait, we can handle 10,000 people in a day. That's pretty cool. I'm very glad to know that.
I mean, that's like low level too. I mean, I don't know if you just heard, but Frightmare is moving to a fucking big
convention center. Yeah.
The convention center. And because they're hitting 20,000.
Yeah. Well, that's we want to honestly, I like the size we're at right now. I like the venue. We'll be there for another year or two at least.
It was great.
There's something about the environment of a hotel show where everybody's staying together. And, you know, you got James Duval hanging out in the smoking section until 3 o'clock in the morning. And you don't know who you're going to run into in the elevator. You know, you end up riding the elevator down with James Duke Courtney. There's just something about that kind of environment where everybody's staying.
Dicey and I were so blessed to be really graced with Carmela McNeil's presence like almost the whole weekend.
She's such a sweetheart too. She has such a good time.
She was awesome.
She seemed to have a lot of fun. So
she mentioned she might come back for the pop-up market when I talked to her. I talked about every day. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, very cool. Very cool. That is awesome.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, she was so sweet. Everybody enjoyed talking. All the guests except for one were great. So
I heard about that.
He'll never be back to another one of our shows.
Yeah. And you know what? We heard about him before you told us about him.
Yeah. I heard about it.
Well, we got around real quick. Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you the stories I heard of people that actually paid for their 8x10s and then walked right to the first trash can and threw it away.
Oh.
Because their experience was just so bad. You know, yeah. So that.
Wow.
That'll never happen. But everybody else was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, we can't thank you guys enough for choosing us for this
year.
You
guys have been with us since the beginning. And I'll be straight up. This dude, I'm not going to tell you his name, but this dude walked up to me. And I first met this guy last year. And he had wrote to me about 2 or 3 months ago and said, I want to get a media badge. And I said, sorry, all the media badges are given out. And at one point, he caught me over there and he goes, you guys gave Dicey and Chantel a media badge and then give me one? I said, yeah. I said, they've been with us since the beginning. They didn't write to me 2 months ago to see if they could go ahead and get one.
Yeah.
Know exactly who you're talking about. I know who you're talking about because
straight up, I was like, they You came up to me 2 months ago asking for one, dude. Sorry, man.
Yeah, that she was on that shit.
They've been supporting me since the Scary Dad days. I said, I'm sorry. They
Yeah, we had a panel there.
Yeah.
He came up to me and he complained about it. And he said, you know, it seems like the more press would be better. And I was like, actually, this place is packed.
I was about to say, does it look like we're having trouble? Like people always come up to me. They're like, you know, you need this. You need that. You should do this. I'm like, does it look like we're having any issues at all? Tony has like come to learn Tony is amazing at marketing and working social media algorithms. It is insane. If I was to show you guys our numbers with interactions when it comes to social media, because Tony knows exactly what to do when it comes to those algorithms for Instagram and Facebook. It is organically, we have grown so much over 2 years. It is amazing. It blows my mind every time I see it.
It's because y'all got that magic. Y'all, I mean, it's that trifecta. You guys got it.
Agree. Now, and it was no disrespect to him, you know, but he came up to me complaining about it, you know, so right. I wouldn't even have known anything, but he was like, how'd you get a badge and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, we did it last year. We filled out the application. I was like, we've been here since day one. Like,
right.
You just fill out the application. Like, I was letting him know, like, ain't nobody giving no sexual favors. Fill out the application. I don't know what you're trying to say.
Right. He straight up pulled me aside and asked me about it. I was like, because they've been supporting us since the beginning. They kind of get grandfathered in. I'm sorry about that.
The entitlement that came with that, though, was kind of interesting
just to me. The entitlement we deal with now between that kind of stuff and just all around with, like, a very small percentage of vendors. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of vendors are absolutely amazing. And, you know, there's a very small percentage that I don't plan on seeing back at our shows. Because it is frustrating sometimes. You know?
It's like being a filmmaker. You don't want to fuck with people that are going to cause drama.
Right. And I mean, you'll notice, cause I had all kind of vendors frustrated with us because we didn't accept payment for next year's show at this show. I'm like, nah, we'll release the application in December. You got to reapply every year. Same thing with volunteers. Yeah. Same thing with everybody. You got to reapply every year, and it gets frustrating after a while. And one of the things is, and you'll notice with our shows that we try to do, this is one of the things that kind of sets us apart is we tend to have a lot of new vendors. There's a certain percentage of vendors we keep around that are our core vendors, but we do so many events that we can actually give other vendors the opportunity to do other events. Like, and I'll give you an example. For the October event, we have a lot of vendors that didn't make it into the October event. So they're going to get first shot at the December event. Okay. Now we're going to have that 40 or 50% of our core vendors that are there at every show that are going to still be there in December. But then we'll also have 50% new vendors that weren't there in October. Because we want to try to keep everything fresh. We want to try to keep everything different. And you'll notice with our guests, one thing that Tony is adamant about, we don't do recycled guests. We don't do the same guests you see at every single convention. I mean, there are guests that have been in Texas 6 times over the past year. Mm-hmm. And people will write to us, say, why aren't you getting that person? And we're like, because they've been in Texas 6 times over the past year. We want to do something different. We want to bring y'all people that you don't normally get to see. You know, we want to bring those different folks in. Felissa shows up.
Yeah,
she literally comes down. Felissa like calls us and says, hey, I got my flight booked, I'll see y'all there, just have a table ready for me. So Felissa's a different thing. I tell everybody Tom Savini's at Frightmare every year. Felissa's our Tom Savini. Felissa's pretty much over there every year. So
cool. I enjoyed the panels. I learned so much from the panels. I went to the film screenings. Like, I was just all over the place. I still got a lot of footage I got to roll out
to. It's coming, we promise.
But I just had a wonderful time. You all did a great job. Can't wait to see what you do next. I am going to go to the October 29th one. Even if, you know, I have to be somewhere else, I'm going to make sure I'm back here for that.
Okay.
For sure. And then whatever y'all have coming up next year, we'll put our application in and cross our fingers and hope we're on the board again.
we're probably going to have in between October and the film festival, we're going to have a few other pop-up markets coming up and maybe a screening here or there But yeah, we're always plotting stuff. It is funny because, like, I'll be full disclosure, I already have all the dates of everything we're doing between now and next summer.
Oh, but nice.
Our method is we don't promote one show before another show goes right. through. So we kind of have a formula with the way we do things. And,
it's working.
It's working out pretty good so far. So we don't plan on changing anything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I will tell you this. I met a lot of people because I was like talking to everybody. I was like, hey, see, this is the best weekend ever. But I met so many people that drove in just like for hours to be at the show because they were just like, this is like the show we really like. We enjoyed it last year. Our friend came and there's like, we really wanted to be a part of it. And we just loved every minute.
The response, the feedback from everyone has been tremendous, whether it be vendors, attendees, hotel staff, the guests, just everyone has been just great feedback. It was very, very uplifting. It was overwhelming at one point. I literally was walking, I think it was a Saturday. I was walking around the show floor and I went on the side by the film, the film screening room was, and I walked back over to the big vendor hall 2. And at one point I had to go bring a money back to somebody. And I came around to one of the little hallways where the vendors were. And I remember just looking and just all of a sudden it hit me. I was like, you know, not even 2 years ago, we had 250 people in a hotel ballroom. And I can't believe what I'm looking at right now. And I started crying.
Yeah.
I mean, I was emotionally overwhelmed with just how much this has grown. I mean, and just the love that we felt.
Doing
and
something right.
And,
yeah.
It was amazing. Oh, yeah.
Hey, Scott, I know we're over an hour, so I'm
fine.
You're good. Okay. I'm curious because I saw someone ask this question and I was thinking about it and I could not come up with an answer. So I want to ask you. What was the last horror film that scared you? That you really thought was scary?
The last horror film that I had nightmares from, I'll put it that way, was definitely Strangers. Because the Strangers is shit that can actually happen. That's what I've always told people.
I can't watch that stuff.
The scariest movies that I've always seen were stuff that could actually happen to me. Yeah. You know, Michael Myers, Jason, even Leatherface. That shit's kind of like out of the realm of stuff that could happen. And let me see if it's right here. Shit. 1 second.
See that collection back there. Oh, we
got I got a few VHS tapes back here. Let me see if I see it.
I see Pinhead.
Yeah. And they have actually pulled it.
The old ladies had to pull out their spectacles. I was trying not to. That's why I just leaned ahead.
I thought I might have had the VHS handy because I had it recently, but one of the scariest movies I remember seeing was Kids. Remember the movie Kids came out in 1993 or 92, where it was about just a bunch of really shitty skater kids that, you know, they go through the park and they randomly pick somebody to attack and they took advantage of women. That was a scary ass movie to me because that kind of shit, I was like, this shit really happens now.
Yeah.
So yeah, the movies that scare me and also anything that deals with kids.
Yeah.
That's one thing that always gets me real bad. I remember, while I'm a huge Clive Barker fan, I'm also a Stephen King fan. I mean, I ain't gonna lie, but The Mist, when The Mist came out, when the actual movie, I had read the story a million times. And the ending in the movie was totally different than the book. And I remember seeing that ending where his son ends up, you know, dying. And that fucked me up bad. I was like, you know, just Pet Sematary. The scene in Pet Sematary where Gage gets hit by the truck. That's a scene that haunts me. You know, that's the kind of shit that I find scary.
Yeah.
All other stuff I'm kind of numb to. Watching a terrifying sorrow woman in half naked upside down, that I'm kind of numb to that kind of stuff. That doesn't give me nightmares.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But as authors, I will say that's what we live for. We live for the stuff that's disturbing.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to make you go, what the fuck?
Long after the credits roll, what did I sit and continue after it's over?
I mean, you know, I rewatch stuff later, and I think one of the movies that definitely was a lot more disturbing the second time I saw it was Hereditary, because that was the second time I saw it was in the hotel room during the convention.
That's a rough watch. They got some rough shit in that movie.
And yeah. I was like, damn, I forgot. Like, because I saw it in the theater and, you know, I just go to experience it at first. I have to go back a few times to really dig in. And that is a fucked up movie.
Oh, yeah. 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 That movie's a rough one for sure. Yeah. Another movie that actually that had me jump a lot was definitely this one with Ethan Hawke.
Black Phone?
The one, him and his family move into the house. He finds the 8mm. Yes, yeah. Sinister. Sinister is one of my favorite recent horror movies. That one was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to give you a little preview for you don't know, sir, for my booth, you know, for the October show, I might be having like a little bit of a Sinister backdrop for people to come do some selfies. Yeah.
That is by far one of my favorite recent horror movies with Sinister. Sinister was great. I mean, Ethan Hawke is he's a beast. I mean, he's a
but that incredible movie actor with all the kids. I mean, Black Phone? Just fucked up.
Sinister. Yeah, it was like I said, it was a rough. Tons of jump scares and shit.
And just the scene of the dark house and
I was on a panel with C. Robert Cargill years ago. He's one of the writers for Sinister. And I had not watched the movie yet. I hadn't watched it yet.
I love that movie.
So after I watched it, I was like, oh my God, I need his autograph. I need to talk to him. It's like, afterwards, but I was like, you know, talking to him. I mean, I got pictures with him or whatever, but I did not understand the gravity of who I was sitting next to at the time. Fucking broke. Sinister 1 and 2. This shit is amazing.
It's a great movie. Really great.
There's actually, I say this all the time on the show, there's actually a study that movie, out of all like Exorcist and all these classic, even Stephen King movies, that movie, they were monitoring people's heart rates. It made people's heart rates go higher than any of the other horror movies from the past that they had specifically used for that study.
Yeah, I believe it.
I mean, they did it so, so well. I mean, that's, you can die, dude. You just did the best thing you could do in life.
You mentioned The Black Phone. That's their latest one. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like that.
You guys
one a lot
had
too.
The free tickets for that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, we had the pre-screening for that.
Oh, one. Yeah. I by the time I did it, it was already sold out, so I didn't get one. But
that was a good one. I enjoyed that one a lot. They're talking about doing a sequel already, which I don't understand how they're going to do a sequel.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that.
I can understand a prequel possibly, but like going back to the shit he went through when he was young. But I don't see how they're going to do a sequel. But yeah, that movie, I enjoyed that one a lot. Like I said, Ethan Hawke's just awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah absolutely.
He's usually the good guy.
Right. Well, he's found a calling with some of the horror stuff for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I guess we got to let you go. But in the spirit of this being the matchmaker edition for Scott Fondo, I know you're not on the prowl looking, you know, but what is it that you, you'll know, okay, this is worth me getting off the market for? What does that look like for you?
The biggest thing is someone that understands the shit that I'm into and the stuff that I do. It just, you know, I'm really busy with a lot of stuff. You know, I do events all the time and everything. And one of the biggest things is finding somebody that can enjoy doing that. Either understand that I'm going to be gone a lot. I would love someone that would enjoy doing that kind of stuff with me. Mm, you know, that helps somebody understands the most. There's two huge things.
Yeah, because I mean, I know you've seen it, and I know that I have seen it when you have a partner that doesn't understand what you're doing, and they give you a hard time about it. It's miserable.
And I can't tell you the number of times I've heard, "Oh no, it's fine. You can have the stuff you enjoy. I'll be okay with it." I'm like, "Nah, you won't."
No, especially when they see all the pictures with the chicks that you take pictures with.
Well, I keep people guessing. That's why people are always guessing. They're like, "Is he dating her?" I'm like, "Nah."
He's all in. All friends.
All friends.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you all for having me on.
Thank you.
It's amazing and worth going over time for. So I hope you won't hold it against us that we
look forward to being back. And next time, what I'll do is I'll make sure to get Tony back on here.
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
I got to dig all into Tony next.
don't dig too deep on him. Trust me.
Yeah, he'll be like, you know, I can just see him kind of circling around the answer, not quite answering.
Or looking at his phone.
I already know what the title of that episode would be. Tony, the Mystery Man.
Oh, yeah.
Tony, the Mystery Man. Yeah.
But Tony is just, I think he's amazing, too. But I really hope we get to get him on.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, Scott? I did have one more question for you, if you don't mind. So you're into this, but have you thought about coming at it from a different perspective, like creating movies yourself, being a filmmaker, writing movies, being the director, producer, that sort of thing?
I've written a couple of I've started writing a couple of short movie scripts just from the experiences from when I was a kid and everything and stuff to do just culturally with Creole culture and stuff. I've been doing a bunch of extra work with different movies. I'm trying to learn more behind the scenes stuff and everything that's involved with making them and stuff. But there's I definitely want to get more involved with filmmaking a lot. It's definitely awesome. Something that I want to do.
Yeah.
Especially with my son. I got my son involved in, you know, he's always wanted to be an actor. He kind of came with me at that a few years ago. He had always been scared to tell anybody that. So I kind of got him some roles as an extra. I got him in a stunt training school and everything. And kind of started doing this stuff because of him, just to support him. Like I showed sort of a stunt training school like 2 years ago just to get him into it because he was worried about going by himself. I'm like, well, fuck it. I'll go ahead and go too. So I did a couple of classes with that, but yeah, it's something I want to get more involved in for sure.
Okay.
I love independent film. I love everything behind it. Just the passion behind it. You know, all the directors that I know, they love what they do.
Right.
I watch a lot of independent movies. So I know the heart. There's three film festivals that I help judge, you know, including ours. It's something I want to get more involved in for sure.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right, I look forward to seeing where that goes.
All right.
Tell everybody where they can find you in the socials if you want.
You find me Instagram at Old School Creole, which is OLSKOOLCREOLE, and Facebook under Scott Fontenot. There's not a whole lot of us out there, but. And of course, Houston Horror Film Festival. All you got to do is search that, Houston Horror Events. Follow any one of the pages, and you'll get all our information. So.
And don't be asking him about us. Do your thing. Don't worry about what we
do. Yeah.
Mind your business. All right. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank y'all for having me on. Like I said, look forward to the next time.
Awesome. Right. Good night.
Okay. Good night, y'all.